Kurt Miller grew up in Neenah, Wisconsin. While studying at Broadcast Technology Management at UW-Platteville, he earned the nickname Shop Buddy because he could often be found in Tim Trent's shop fixing the gear that students broke. After graduation, Kurt was hired by Roscor as a field engineer for broadcast systems in Indonesia. Kurt worked in Jakarta, Indonesia for 12 years. In the mid-2000s, Kurt moved his family to the Chicago area, where he's worked for customers like Sinclair, Valley Sports, Chicago White Sox, Milwaukee Brewers, Google, Facebook, Epic up here, Northwestern Kellogg School, and many others. Fun fact about Kurt, one of his specialties is troubleshooting devices when they don't talk to each other. That's useful. Kurt is an SBE CBT, and he is Dante Level 3 certified. When he manages to find free time, Kurt enjoys riding his 1978 Honda Goldwing motorcycle, kayaking, and renovating his home. Welcome, Kurt.
Oh, thank you, Vicki. It's a distinct honor to be invited to speak here at the Wisconsin Broadcasters Clinic. I've had the unique opportunity in the past few years to be involved with two SMPTE 2110 implementations. Those were Marquee Sports in Chicago for the Chicago Cubs and Bally Sports in Tampa, which was a Sinclair project. Over the course of those two projects, I've learned some of the pluses and minuses, and over the past five plus years at NAB and the major shows, everybody's been saying, you know, IP, 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 we have to go IP. If you haven't gone IP by now, you're being left behind. And I think that there are some general distinct use cases where IP makes sense, and it brings value to the proposition, but I think there's also people who are just going IP because I should go IP. In the first slide there, I had the yin and the yang, because it's kind of the pros and the cons. One side of the pro is going to be somebody else's con. And so if we look at configuration complexity, with SDI, there basically was no configuration. You connected the transmitter to the receiver, you plugged the cable in, and it worked. You had your, whereas on the other side of 2110, you plug it in, and absolutely nothing works until it's configured. So with SDI, you have the one video essence, 16 channels of audio, the Hank and the Vank, it's all there. All you had to do is you checked it, and once your signal was connected, it was going to work. With 2110, it's the exact opposite. There's the ultimate flexibility, but that means that there's complexity in the configuration. Everything needs to be configured. You need to configure your network switch ports. Each switch port needs to be configured with specific parameters. There are some general parameters that apply to all the switch ports, but depending upon if that's where your PTP master generator is connected, that would have a different configuration than where a device is connected. Some devices require configuration for error correction, whereas other devices don't require that configuration. Sometimes you have to take a network switch port and you have to a 100 gig port and you're splitting it up into four 25 gig ports. Your media network switch requires configuration. Then each device, once on your transmit and receive devices, each device needs to have multiple layers of configuration. You have to configure, it's a network interface. So you have to configure the addresses, you have to configure the unicast address, the device address, the gateway. You have to configure the PTP domain. And then you have to, for each of your, in 2110, they're all different essence files. So you have your video essence file, your audio essence file, your metadata, and each one of those requires a multicast address. And then if you're going redundant, you need a separate set of addresses that are unique for your redundant media network. So everything needs to be configured. Another aspect is testing and troubleshooting. Whereas in SDI, everybody had a patch panel. I mean, unless you got way down to the very small systems, but if you're putting in anything above a fly pack, you had a patch panel. So in testing and troubleshooting, it was very easy to teach somebody with limited experience how to troubleshoot a signal flow. You could walk an intern through calling them up on the phone and saying, hey, go to that patch panel, second patch panel down on the top row, it says camera one. Yeah, okay, put a patch cord into the top patch. Now you see there's another jack, it's labeled waveform. Maybe it's highlighted red or something on your patch panel. Plug it in. Do you have signal on your monitor? Yeah, okay, good. Well, now you can sit there and patch some other points and you can follow a flow and figure out where your signal is working or isn't working. With 2110, there's no patching. I mean, unless you have SDI we still have a good number of SDI signals in any 2110 facility because not everything is going to be IP. But once it's IP, there's no patching. Your patching is basically opening up a command terminal. So with SDI, it's very, very physical, very easily taught, but it's very difficult to do it remotely. With 2110, if you really need to troubleshoot something, you really need to understand looking at the configuration of the switch and following the flow of the multicast streams through the switch. There's a handful of commands that if you get, once you get into it and you get in contact with the right people, they can teach you the right commands and like show IP mroute will sit there and you can look and see where the multicast stream, and you can see all the endpoints where the multicast is going, all the hops, and where it goes. One of the advantages of 2110 is it's very easy to remotely troubleshoot. Very easy to remotely troubleshoot and remotely commission the system. I had the unique opportunity to have two projects, both of which were affected by COVID. When we were doing Marquee Sports, we actually, we were probably at the last 5% of the project, and the site got shut down. It was total shutdown in March. We had enough of the system up and running, they were able to run the system and go forward on their own, and then we had to come back after the season was over and finish up the last 5%. With Tampa, in Bally Sports Tampa, we ended up having COVID restrictions and some companies that have travel restrictions. So as long as we had the gear up and running and we could get a remote terminal session going or get somebody logged in on TeamViewer or LogMeIn or whatever their preferred remote application software was, we were very, very easily able to spin up systems with the vendors logging in remotely troubleshooting and doing a great deal of the system configuration and troubleshooting remotely. When another advantage or disadvantage of 2110 is signal density, whereas have this illustration of SDI, when you look at the back, that was the back of an Evertz router, and then you're looking at 288 signals, whereas if on the right-hand side you have the patch panel with MPO connectors, and making the assumption that you're using an MPO at 100 megabits, you know, that number of MPO connectors, you'd have 2,688 signals in a much smaller physical space. So in some ways, this is an advantage and a disadvantage of in that SDI, it's one signal per cable. So your cable density, your cable trays get very full very quickly. Anybody who's been in a facility that's been established and been around for a long time, you often have the floor tiles that are bulging a little bit at the seams where you kind of have to stomp on the floor a little bit to get the floor to close up again. But it's a lower density of failure. You have one cable fail, you just lost one signal. Whereas with 2110, you have a higher density, so very easy to transmit multiple signals. If you have a duplex cable that's 100 megabits, you could have a truck dock feed where you're getting 16 in, 16 out over a duplex single mode fiber. Now, that also means that you have a higher density of failure. If you have one single SFP, if you have that 100 gigs SFP fail, now you, instead of losing one signal of losing one cable, you just lost up to 32 channels, or 32 signals, 32 video signals, plus all the associated audio signals, plus any of the metadata signals. So you just lost, you could have a lot of failure within a small density of signal. So that's why, that's one of the reasons that there's a great need for the 2110-7 redundancy. You really have to, it's a real big cost consideration. It's obviously you're doubling your network switch in all your fiber infrastructure. But when you think about it, the fact that you can lose one SFP and you lose that density of signal, you really have to think long and hard of do I not want to spend that money on the Dash 7 and put in the redundant infrastructure. I would say another challenge, probably one of the biggest challenges of pros and cons of SMPTE 2110 is documented specifications. In the SDI world, there was almost never a piece of gear that you couldn't go to a manufacturer or a website and get a full list of all the specifications. It would tell you, you know, what formats it supported, what types of audio it supported, bit rates, your color space. The gamut of specifications was there. In 2110, not so much. There are vendors that have very good specifications, and there are also a lot of vendors where you go to the spec page and it will just give you, it supports 2110, or it supports AES67-30. But if it says it supports AES67-30, but it doesn't tell you how many audio receivers it supports, how many audio transmitters it supports. And the other issue that you run into is it's constantly changing. Whereas you can ask the question 1 year, and in a year and a half, the first time I used a Tektronix Prism, they only supported one audio stream. So you could decode one audio stream up to 8 channels. Tektronix recently came out with a firmware upgrade that now it supports 4 audio streams. So the answer isn't always the same to the same question. What you end up with, though, is another issue with upgrades is now if you upgraded that Tektronix Prism to that latest firmware, that also, since they added audio receivers, that changes the API of how to do the routing to that device. So now if you upgraded your firmware on your Prism to get that new feature, you just broke your router orchestration level control system's ability to route to the Prism until your router vendor upgrades their implementation of their API to your Tektronix Prism. So there are a lot of challenges in that respect. Some unique challenges with 2110 that I've run across. One of the biggest issues is audio, in the fact that, so in 2110-7, 2110-30 audio, there are 6 standards of audio. You can have, with the base level being level A at 1 millisecond, 8 channels of audio. But there's also, I don't remember all the terminology, because the base level is the one that's the most supported, but you can get up to BX, I think is the highest one, where it's 125 microsecond packet timing, you can get 64 channels of audio per stream. Now, the issue, the first facility that I did, we actually had no audio matrix within the routing, so we had to make sure that all the manufacturers within the facility would subscribe to the same audio channels and audio channel layouts. And we talked to the customer about their requirements, and it was a production facility, so they only needed 2 channel. They decided that their base production facility needed 2 channel stereo. So as long as we had every device, every transmitter configured as 2 channel stereo, and every receive device configured as 2 channel stereo, everything worked just fine. But as your systems get more complex, you realize that not everything has to go through, be able to be routed to everything. So the second facility I did, we ended up with several unique audio streams where we would take, let's say, their remote feed decoders would come across, and we needed to get more than two channels of audio, so we configured those as eight-channel streams that only went to the audio mixer. We couldn't route them to other record devices, but as long as we could get that, we actually created two separate streams. We created one stream that was a two-channel stream that could be routed anywhere, and then we were able to replicate those channels within an eight-channel stream that we could route to the audio mixer. Because the audio mixer supported up to 256 channels, but that's 256 channels making the assumption that you have eight-channel streams. So as you get into larger systems, then the thing that's becoming more and more common is for the router vendor to implement some sort of an audio matrix on the media network. So it acts as a stream groomer, so not all of your devices need to support the same streams. You can have one device that has eight-channel streams as a source, and you can have destinations that are only stereo, or even splitting it off into mono. And what they do is they actually have a audio matrix that sits on the media network. And it's able to actually act as a stream groomer and actually route the audio under the control of the orchestration system. Another unique challenge that I've run across with 2110 is don't make the assumption that all formats are supported. One of the unique scenarios we ran into was when I did Marquee Sports, the camera vendor, we had started the facility with the design of 3G, and then the executive decision was made by the customer that they wanted to be 720 because it was going to be sports. Well, when we got the camera vendor on site, we explained that we were going to be 720, and he told me, well, that's not possible. And I said, well, what do you mean it's not possible? He said, well, if you were going to do SDI out of the CCU, we'd do 720, but we don't do 720 in IP. So then we made the decision was made to move to 1080i as a format for that facility. So we moved from being 3G to 720 to eventually launching in 1080. Had another instance where the video server playout manufacturer had shipped their gear with the SDI cards, but then they also shipped along IP cards, and they said, we're going to install the IP cards when we get on site. And there was a little bit of a lack of coordination of what the house format was, and the commissioning engineer showed up on site and said, well, what's your format? And we said, well, for that facility, we're 3G. We said, oh, it's 1080p. And the field engineer gave me kind of a strange look, and he looked back at me, and he says, I said, is that a problem? And he said, I don't know. And I came back up after about an hour, and he said, you know, he was reinstalling the SDI cards into his server, and he said, we don't support 3G yet. We only support 1080i. So, and this wasn't that long ago. I mean, you'd almost make the assumption that everything is going to be 3G these days, if not 3G, 4K, and all the formats, but you can't make the assumption, so it becomes the game of 50 questions, and you have to remember which of the 50 questions to ask to make sure that all the devices support everything that you need to be able to do. I think the one thing, the installation can be much quicker, but much more time is required for testing. So every time I give an estimate as to how long it's going to take to test a 2110 system, I think I'm getting better at it, but definitely was way far off on the first one. In that because each stream is a separate essence, when you were checking an SDI system, you could go to your patch panel, and once you ran through the whole patch, you knew that the video was there. Well, if the video was there, the audio was there, and the captioning was there, or anything that came along with the video, because it's all one package. When you have 2110, because they're all separate essence files, you need to test each essence file, and you need to test each one of them individually, which is very time consuming. You know, of trying to make sure that you make sure that not only the video essence is there, each audio stream that you expect to be configured is there. Because some of these are configured automatically, some of them are configured with scripts. Some of the manufacturers will run a script. Some of them are actually all configured manually. Whereas if somebody accidentally puts the wrong multicast in configuring their sender, and you configure your router control system, making the assumption that the multicast you told them is what they configured, when you try to route that audio, it's not there. Because your router control system just told your receiver to tune in a multicast A, but it's the manufacturer configured it as multicast B. So the address wasn't the same, so when it's telling the receiver what multicast to join, it's not there. So meaning you need to check everything and test everything. But like I said, the installation being much quicker of 32 signals on an MPO connector, click, click, you just connect the 32 cables. Another instance that I ran across that was rather unique is, so 2110-7, I had to mention before, dash 7 redundancy of if you have all these bulk of signals on a single cable, it's really, really good to have it redundant. But I've also run into a manufacturer where they had not implemented all of the signals within redundancy. So it was a camera manufacturer, and what they did is, if you read through the entire manual of every piece of gear, you found out that the return signals were not implemented in dash 7 yet. So all of the outgoing signals, your main, your character out, your audio out of the camera base station, were all redundant. PTP was redundant across both media and network connections, but the return video was not implemented as dash 7 redundancy yet. So they were coming out with a firmware upgrade within X number of months, and we decided, okay, yeah, that's acceptable. We're not gonna jump through the hoops of wiring an SDI backbone of trying to get something in there for the return signal only for those series of months, but something to be aware of. Okay. So redundancy. Not all devices support the same control protocols. So when you have a dash 7 or a SMPTE 2110 system, you have basically you have transmitters, you have multicast streams on transmitters, and you have receivers that are going to join and leave those multicast streams. You need some way to control those receivers to join or leave those multicast streams. One of the most basic ways is to statically set the multicast. Just simply type in the multicast, and I've done that in instances of switcher inputs that are never going to change. I want these switcher inputs to be these cameras. I'm going to put those multicasts in, and they're not going to be controllable. But if you need to route something, either your record server inputs, your routable switcher inputs, your encoder feeds, you need a way to control that. Well, there's multiple methods, either using Ember Plus or API or AMWA ISO 5 for connection management. The one issue you can run into is even if they say that they support the same protocols, it doesn't always work. We did actually have another, on the one instance of site I was on, we had both vendors said, yeah, we support ISO 5. We're just going to use ISO 5 to control the inputs to that server. Well, anytime the control system would send an ISO 5 route command to the server, it would crash. So that didn't work very well, unfortunately. We ended up having extra channels within the gateway devices that we had on site, so we just used the routing manufacturer's gateways as an IP to IP gateway to statically set up multicast that server, and then we would route to the inputs of the gateway. So we got around it by hardware. The other option, when we have two weeks to get to air, that's the option that actually works, as opposed to forcing somebody into a development cycle of, hey, somebody, get your developers to look at this and get it working. Let's see. Remote configuration is very easy. I think I touched on that before. Of basically, all you need to be able to do is get your facility online and connected to the internet. Of it is so easy to have vendors remotely configure your system, and especially even devices the Tektronix Prism and or Fabrix or Leader, whatever your favorite. I've only used the Prism so far for the implementations I've worked with. And the Prism, you can access the GUI of the Prism. You can access the monitor out via VNC. So the person can sit there, they can go in, they can configure their device, they can look at the Prism and see if it's routing correctly, if they're getting their signals through. It's just, there's almost no need for people to get on site anymore. unless, you know, you end up with vendors who send together Heath kits of, well, here's a bunch of cards, and the one camera manufacturer still actually doesn't ship their IP cards in the CCUs. They ship the CCU and then they ship you a 2110 module that needs to be installed with very small ribbon cables. And my decision was best to let the manufacturer deal with opening up their piece of gear that's brand new and really should work out of the box. I would say another unique advantage of 2110 is the flexibility of once everything is on the router, you can do very complex workflows. I would say in a small single studio facility or a small facility, you're probably not going to get the ROI, the return on investment, as to if you have a larger facility or a distributed workflow. If you have a larger facility where you have multiple studios and you're trying to share resources and allocate resources, when everything is on the router, you can set up all kinds of things with salvos of establishing which cameras are being allocated to this studio, which audio mixer is being allocated to that studio, and have very dynamic workflows that are very easily to be reconfigured on the fly. Another advantage of 2110, I think, is it's going to make a lot more sense in 2110 when you have IP-specific hardware. I think there's some manufacturers that are already there and have IP gear that was basically meant to be an IP device. There are other manufacturers where, you know, Grass Valley K-Frame, you're still getting a, you know, 1216RU switcher that's its base architecture is SDI. They have IP input cards and they're actually just acting as gateways. It's an IP to SDI card that's converting, and then internally all the processing is SDI. Now Grass Valley has already run a K-Frame in the cloud, so they can do, it doesn't have all the features and the full feature set of the K-Frame that's a physical hardware, but they're getting there. So, I mean, once you establish that you can run all your video processes, all your video and all audio processes in VMs, I think the wave of the future is going to be just simply, you're going to install a very large, redundant VM infrastructure, and you're going to be buying VMs from people. You're going to get a VM, switcher VM, you're going to spin up your video server VM, and you're really not going to have interconnection. It's going to be the interconnection of basically the VMs talking to each other, and it's going to be a very easy spin up. Well, very easy install. Complex workflows. I think the other thing that we're eventually going to move to, and you're seeing some of this already, is the move to OpEx versus CapEx. Before, it used to be you would buy a router and you would run it 10 years, 15 years, maybe longer, depending upon what the product life cycle was or your needs of your facility. I think you're going to see more of that moving away in the move to IP, as people are moving to a license-based model, where you're going to buy a license. You're not going to buy a physical switcher that's, as I said, if you're going to start moving to a VM infrastructure, they're going to sell you a license for a VM for a switcher, and you're going to have recurring yearly costs. So it's not going to be that upfront capital cost, but it's going to be the recurring costs of licensing that switcher. Now, good, bad, it just depends on how your revenue models are structured and how it works for you. Good or bad. And I think that is the end of my presentation.
So Kurt, I've been listening to SMPTE 2020, the 2010, 2110 discussions for about 3, 4, 5 years now. I'm still not getting a warm, fuzzy feeling about it. I guess there's some level of just, we all work in, sophisticated environments. We stream, we have media asset management systems. We have all, you know, we're extremely digital world that we all work in. But that center routing hub of everything, there's just some level of predictability with it that when I listen to the gentleman this morning and you again, it's just, it just seems like there's so many things that can, so many things that can blow up in a bad way and take you down completely. Whereas other, you know, a little more traditional system might give you more opportunities to stay functional.
Yeah, I would say that there are more opportunities and more ways to blow things up in 2110. But there are things you can do to protect yourself of having redundancy. So if you're doing a firmware upgrade or you have to upgrade if for some reason you have to upgrade your switch needs to upgrade firmware, that's an excellent reason to have the -7 redundancy. Another thing you can do to protect yourself is how your switch is configured. The one way of configuring your switch is to be flat. Everything is on the same VLAN within the unicast addresses of all your devices. Another thing you can do is configure each port, each device, to be its own subnet. So that kind of sets up your blast radius, as it were. So if you connect a device and it's incorrectly configured, it's not going to work. So the example of if you are on a flat network and you connected a device and it was sharing the same multicast addresses of a device that's online, that is going to be a really bad day because they are both not going to work. But if you configure your switch so that each port is a layer 3 and you plug that device in, if that device is not configured correctly, its multicasts aren't going to get out.
One follow-up question is, what percentage of the new installations you're doing are 2110 versus traditional SDI?
I really don't have, corporately, I don't know. I don't have an absolute number for you. Of the facilities I've done, most recent facilities I've done have been IP, but now I'm also moving back and I've got two new installations that are going in that are SDI. And it kind of depends on scale. The ones that I'm doing that are SDI are definitely smaller scale, smaller budgets. But the other facilities that I did do IP actually could have very well been done as SDI, but the corporate entity that was putting them in made the decision that they were moving forward and everything that they were going to do moving forward was going to be IP.
We're in the process right now of replacing our 18-year-old SDI router, and we're looking at should we put some IP cards in the router. Would you recommend maybe doing that just to get a feel for IP video?
There's lots of gateways, gateway drugs in the IP world, and I see a lot of customers. I've had I did a project with Charter Spectrum in Milwaukee, and one of their engineers was talking to me about that they were going to set up some sort of a playground, of buying a couple devices. I think the one way it makes sense to go IP is if you're building a whole new facility, if you're going to replace everything, if you're buying everything new. I think it probably makes sense but IP is the future, and everything moving forward is going to be IP. I think it's good to get your feet wet. Okay. So the hard part is, so if you buy the IP cards, but you don't have anything else that's IP, it's kind of one of those catch-22s of you have to have enough devices to make a critical mass of I'm doing something with this. And the other thing to consider too is when you making future equipment purchases, what makes sense. And for instance, audio is a great place to jump into IP. But in audio, there's always been this myriad of each audio vendor had their own audio network. Wheatstone had Wheatnet, and SSL was backbone of Dante, and Calrec has AES-67. I would definitely try to stick with something. Look for anything that's trying to follow the SMPTE standards. because there are ways of implementing Dante into 2110, but you need Dante to do it decently and correctly. You need Dante Domain Manager, which is yet another layered device on top. And when you get into layering a bunch of widgets to make something work, it's not a good solution in my book. But
well, when it comes to the audio, you're saying there's just so many different configurations for the audio. Let's say you have a 2-channel device and you got a 4-channel device or 16. Is that, bear with me, I'm mm-hmm. trying to wrap my head around all this. Is that manipulated in, like, say, a router, or is that outboarded, or is it you have to do actually in the device? Or?
Per device. Per device, but now that what I said is that there are some router vendors. For instance, I know Evertz and Imagine and Grass Valley are the three that I know of that have, where they'll put a matrix on the media network. And so Evertz, in their old implementation, they would have their TDM router, and they had an ATDM router, and they would be able to take in AES or analog, and they would de-embed, and they would send it out TDM, and there would be an audio matrix, and they would control that within their ecosystem. They're doing the same thing now in IP, where they're putting an audio matrix, and let's say you have a 2-channel transmitter that can only output 2 channels, but you have another device. There are some manufacturers that dictate, all my devices are going to be 4 channels, and they're going to come in 4-channel blocks. If you want 4 channels, you get 4 channels per stream. Next stream is another 4 channels, and they have to have all 4 channels present. So now you end up with, okay, I only have a 2-channel transmitter, what am I going to do with that? So if you have an audio matrix in the middle, you can take the 2 channels and you can duplicate those 2 channels, so you have a 4-channel stream that's going to be able to go to that 4-channel receiver. But you can't, what you can't do is mix and match of, okay, I'm going to configure this as a 2-channel source, and this is an 8-channel receiver, so it'll only pick up the 2-channel. No, it isn't going to work. They all need to be configured as the same channel count from transmitter to receiver.
Kurt, for the long-term future and maintaining an SDI system or SMPTE 2110, is there a difference in the financial cost to maintain one or the other and the time cost to maintain them?
I would say in a 2110 facility with network switches, we're seeing a lot more vendors that are requiring service contracts, whereas in SDI, a lot of times, there was always a service contract offered, but often if you called up the manufacturer, they would answer the phone. Some of them actually would ask you, hey, what's your service contract number, and some of them were kind of sticklers about that. Others would answer your question and help you out whether you had a service contract or not. IT really isn't structured that way. IT is, if you don't have a service contract, we need a firmware upgrade. Well, you're not up to date on your service contract. So I think there's a different skill set required to maintain both infrastructures. You really need somebody who knows how to get into the command line and configure the switches. If you're going to maintain a facility of adding devices, either you have to have somebody on staff or have access to somebody. Either you get in a service contract with somebody, or there's switch manufacturers. I know a handful of people that, hey, these are the go-to people. I'm going to reach out to those persons because I can spin my wheels on it for a good long time, or I can call this person up and he can fix it within 2 minutes. So,
thank you, Kurt.
All right, thank you.